Hey, good morning from beautiful Costa Rica. I'm Gio here. Another imperfect podcast. Again, still don't have a name for these. It's just hit record and share. And it's been such a difference from when I first embarked on recording podcasts, where I thought everything had to be perfect and edited, and the intention was, oh, we're gonna grow this and reach a lot of people. And boy, how that's changed over the years. Even hear some workers in the background, which I'm grateful for on a Saturday morning. People want to get up and work, and especially in Costa Rica where things move very, very slow. So I'm back here after an incredible trip to Peru. My last update was after Machu Picchu, which was the incredible ruins on top of a mountain, which I still can't fathom how they built it. It just gets me to ask a lot of questions about our history and our civilization and what we know, what we've been told, what we believe, and what's important about all of that, if anything. Maybe I'll just start there. Sharing some concepts with a friend, just about things I've heard that I'm not sure if I believe, like around like flat earth and concealed history and some of the symbolism in movies that we watch. If it's this shared consciousness around potential truth in our history, or if someone really knows and they're trying to sort of leak clues to us. For example, I saw a post today about that HBO show, Game of Thrones, and how there's all these kingdoms that could be in different lands, and maybe there's a flat plain that goes on forever, and the ice wall can be like Antarctica that's wrapped around the earth. And if you don't know anything about the flat earth theory, I'm not saying I believe it. It's interesting to look into. And they start to think, like, obviously humanity, I think, is civilization's more than 6,000 years old. I think this technology that we see remnants of in Lebanon, at Baalbek, in Peru, Machu Picchu, the pyramids, like there's a technology that's missing. Definitely a technology that's missing. And some insights that came to me also about this energy grid and how it may have been dismantled at some point for some reason. It could have been a natural disaster that took it out. But I think it's this natural flow of humanity trying to break free, to evolve past a certain threshold. And I think that's the next threshold, is this conscious evolution. Or maybe it goes back and forth over thousands of years. And maybe it's just this realm that we call Earth, or 3D, whatever we're gonna call it, that's always gonna be like that, moving back and forth through this light and dark and technology and reset, because it's the perfect place for souls to evolve, for us to come and have a spiritual journey, because it has that duality. It has the light, the dark, the challenges, the ups and downs, and it's perfect for learning as a spiritual being. What it's preparing us for is a whole different question altogether. Like, who knows? And that's part of the mystery. If you knew, your decisions would be much better. But to get a really clear, as they would call it in like the computer and tech world, like an A/B test, you want to compare apples to apples. You don't want to guide the variable too much in a push in a direction. You want to actually have a true test to see what happens. You got to put a human being through it. And so I'll talk about some of the insights that came around that. But another movie that they talk about is The Matrix, when they talk about Zion and the machines that were keeping humanity to a certain level. At seven times, they would come and it would destroy it right back, but they wouldn't destroy it all the way. And they'd leave just enough to rebuild and come again, I guess, until they were ready to consciously evolve, or Neo comes out and kind of sets them free into this destroyed world, or back into the computer. I don't know. So is there a Neo? Is the Neo inside of us? Is it the collective awakening of humanity that we're waiting for, and that this universe, or this reality, or maybe it's a computer simulation, maybe it is the Matrix that's trying to get us to evolve? Who knows? That's a very interesting ramble to start this podcast with. But maybe we'll come back to some of those ideas as we go. And these are always going to be kept short, 20 minutes to 25 minutes, or until I'm finished expressing what's on my mind. So thank you for listening, guys. For those who have reached out and have given me feedback, and I love insights on what you guys think about these kind of topics. because it helps me to expand my perception. And, you know, that's interesting too. Like, I find the media is really trying to push us in one way to have fear about speaking about different views or different ideas, not to question as much and to feel afraid to be canceled and all this bullshit. And I'll talk about a few things around that, kind of. Something that came up in one of my journeys with San Pedro around what is privilege? What is it really? As a white guy, I'll share my experience with that recently, being a bit humbled out in nature. And so I guess we'll go back to the trip, which was amazing. The next couple of days, you know, initially I was supposed to go down there, and I held off right to the end to make a decision, because it was a big decision for me, being in Costa Rica, traveling to Peru. A lot of instability in the world right now. I mean, travel seems to be normal, but I know that can change on a dime. Peru is one of the most locked down countries in the world, and for some reason also has one of the highest death rates to COVID and these other things. And you know, there's a lot of money made with this testing and forced compliance, and some of these companies that own the tests and the patents and stuff like that. So there's, you know, there's a lot of questions as to like what the true intention is: to make money, to have control, to have safety and keep people safe from the virus. But I think as more and more data comes out, we're seeing a lot of it doesn't make sense. Especially back in Canada, they're still pushing, you know, that hey, you know, to keep people safe. There's this pandemic going on with our fearless leader JT. So I decided to go, and one of the reasons I went, because I always wanted to do ayahuasca deep in the jungle. And some of you may be surprised to know that I've done ayahuasca so many times. I've done my first time in Brazil, which wasn't really a traditional jungle setting in the middle of the Amazon. It was on an island in Florianapolis with a facilitator who had definitely a lot of experience, written a few books about it. But I was still going for that jungle experience, which I have yet to do. And I'll tell you why that happened. After the two ceremonies, we did the first ceremony, I shared a bit about that. Second one, we went to Machu Picchu and drank some huachuma before heading into the temple, which was an interesting experience. Then we had a couple of days off. I went to go see some sites, and some of these sites were just incredible. You know, some of the stones up on a mountain, hundreds of thousands of pounds, and I think the strongest crane today can only lift like 20,000 pounds. And so you look at that and you're like, what is going on here? How did they build this? Why did they build this? And there's definitely something we're missing or not understanding. You know, were there giants that could lift? Was there technology, hearing like in the Bible and some of these different texts about sound technology that was used? But I don't think it was singing. It could have been. But definitely something was lost. And around that day and that time, you know, the conversation came up where some of the medicine family started to mention that, hey, you know, maybe it's not a good idea to go to the jungle. We'd love to host, do a few more ceremonies and continue this journey. And I immediately sort of felt kind of resistance to that idea. We'll just put it that way. And one of the greatest, one of my most impactful books I've read was called The Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer. If you haven't read it, I recommend it all the time. It talks about him surrendering to life and allowing it to unfold and not trying to judge the outcome of a decision or try to control the outcome, because in those moments we don't know if it's going to be good or bad. Now, when you feel emotional about something, it's very hard not to react. And that's something I've been working through in my life, and a lot of the time growing up, always wanting to be right and to at least argue my points and to share the way I feel and to be heard, etc. And so as I feel this conversation coming that night at dinner, you know, it came up, hey, what do you guys think? And you know, at my table, like, okay guys, we gotta stay strong on this, we gotta go to the jungle, and you know, let's just make sure our voices are heard. And you know, maybe we can do, we all love the huachuma experience, and you know, maybe we do another huachuma at the end. And facilitators, I don't think we're interested in that, just based on some past experiences of mixing medicines from different facilitators too closely. But I'd heard many stories of people who had combined, not in the same journey, but over a week, you know, some San Pedro and nature integrating ayahuasca experiences. And so the plan was we were going to take a bus to the jungle from Peru, from Cusco, probably about a 6 or 7 hour drive. Could be more, could be a little bit less, depending on who knows what you're going to find out here, about blown out road, a little landslide, or traffic, maybe some cows in the way. And so we didn't have the conversation, but we start talking about how do we make a decision, and we start going through that. Should it just be a straight vote? Should there be a conversation first and then a vote? You know, should people who are indifferent not vote at all? Just put like a neutral vote in so that people are not just picking. You know, what is the fairest way to do this? And the conversation didn't happen until about a day and a half later after lunch one day after we had gone to another site. And we sit down, and first we hear a talk from, you know, the Wachimero, Wachan, a beautiful man, and just learned so much from him and leading the group. And he starts talking, and he talks about all the reasons why we should still stay here and do Wachuma, and no, not one reason why it's a good idea to go and do San Pedro. So immediately I'm feeling the resistance in my mind. It's like, okay, that's not fair. This is why they don't allow canvassing at the poll station, because you may be so convinced or know what your vote is, and then, you know, someone's going to convince you otherwise right before you make that decision, and then later you might regret it. And then his wife goes and says another beautiful and very compelling argument as to why we should stay, and then our leader who organized the whole trip, the same thing. So at this point I'm like, what the fuck, you know, this is not fair, and I'm feeling emotions come up, and they start going around the circle. But at this point I really know there's no vote, you know, it's already been decided, and they're going to allow us to share and vote, but I knew nothing was going to come to fruition from that. And I start thinking about the first guy's like, yeah, you know, I'm indifferent, but, you know, let's do the Wachuma. Or I'd love to go to the jungle, but let's do it. So it's like they would have been open to either one, but they're going to agree with the group and the herd mentality. And this is just a reflection of everything that's going on right now in the media and help trying to make people decide what's right and wrong. And the new thing that everyone's getting behind, and you see it all over the place. And I won't mention any specifics, but I think you know what I'm talking about. It's that power of not wanting to go against the grain and fitting in. So anyways, so four or five people go, and it's coming to me, and I'm just like, oh my God, wanting to just say, hey, like, this is not fair, you know, blah, blah, blah. I know that you can do these things together, and why didn't we, the big one was like, hey, like, why all of a sudden now are you saying this? You know, if you guys been doing this for 20, 30, 40 years, you should have known before the trip, you should have just planned it that way. And then I was like, I might not have even came, and then I caught myself. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to surrender. And when it came to me, I didn't say anything. I just passed. And not saying nothing is, I guess in retrospect, is also a form of maybe protest or letting them know that I wasn't happy. But I thought it would be like the most neutral and just nice way. Hey, guys, I'm just going to pass. I'm okay with whatever. And then afterwards, a lot of guys were coming up to me and saying, hey, are you okay? Whatever. Because I guess they know I'm kind of vocal. But it was probably the best thing I've ever done. I was very, very impressed at myself for not speaking, because after surrendering to it, I realized later that a 7-hour drive in that small bus would have been a hell of a journey, uncomfortable, long, brutal, then to do ayahuasca that night, do ayahuasca the next night, and then drive back in that same bus to go back into sightseeing and all that stuff. It was the wrong decision. And what I also realized was that if it wasn't posed exactly the way it was, so if the ayahuasca wasn't there to entice me on this trip, to get me to come, I probably wouldn't have came. I wouldn't have experienced all the magic that I had. And life happens like that a lot of the time, where certain things are there to push you in a certain direction, and they're really not the most important thing, and you have these realizations later how important that was. And so the full surrender felt really good, and it also reminded me of another amazing book I read, more when I was into sales. But it's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. It may come off a bit manipulative at times, but it's really about how to communicate yourself to kind of like get what you want out of a conversation, not to win the conversation, to be assertive, but to share in a way that's not going to offend others. Because one of the reasons why I didn't share was once I realized it wasn't a vote, there's no point in me arguing, because I can throw off the energy in the group. I might offend people. I might disrupt the energy between the facilitators. I might not have a good trip the rest. Who knows what's going to happen? It may open to more argument there. And so I fully surrendered. And I've been trying more and more to live my life like that, to just surrender. Surrender doesn't mean just to give up. It doesn't mean to just do whatever everyone else wants. It means to really just not react emotionally and not to try to control the outcomes. And as things are happening, just to try to be present. It still means to work hard, it still means to have intention, it still means to live a life of purpose. But as things are happening, unfolding, to surrender to the process. And I guess that can apply to everything that's happening right now, being, you know, the state of the world. And as we move through this time, this amazing time of change, Some people may feel like, hey, we need to fight. I think something's unfolding. I think there are people trying to grasp control. I think the old system is slowly dying. I think a reset is inevitable, one way or the other, whether it's the Great Reset, the consciousness reset, the planetary reset. But I think what will evolve as more and more people are waking up is a better system for all. So maybe there is this digital ID control that's brought out and this way of doing things. But I think ultimately a benevolent way of maintaining society is going to emerge and take over whatever system is put in place, that is transparent, that doesn't allow greed or can monitor it in a way that takes away power from the top and decentralizes it. And I think that's what's happening with cryptocurrencies coming out. Now they're trying to control it. Will they be able to? There's some interesting guys on the trip that had some insights to that. But I believe ultimately we're on the right path. So the next trip, we did Huachuma out in nature, started early in the day. The weather is impossible to predict, so it did start raining a bit. We wandered off, had a few cups in the forest, in the jungle, just standing there between the trees, watching the rain fall down, just being so at peace with nature. And laying in the field, playing some music with some drums, watching the shepherds with their sheep and alpacas and goats, and just really sticking together as a group. One of our leaders got super sick that day. It was amazing to just to see how, you know, in other situations there may be a lot of judgment, or, you know, okay, this person helped organize this trip and, you know, they're deep on the medicine. But it was just this brotherly connection of like, everyone's here to do the work, everyone's here to explore, to go deep and to see what's there. And it was a long day, 12, 13, maybe 14 hours. And as we're getting back to sit down, you know, I just started really reflecting, and what Chan was talking about, you know, being born in this world and, you know, the different ways you can come in, and the first trauma being born in a hospital with all these lights and doctors and drugs and screaming and being pulled away from the mother, and the umbilical cord being cut right away. We had two natural births at home, me and my wife, and he talked about how his daughter was born like on an altar, and they had incense and music and coming into the world in such a way. And I started reflecting on the sadness I had around not really having a lineage as a white man. And I've heard some people talk about this, how, you know, the Western culture has been cut off from nature, and what's been put in place is religion, dogmatic, very controlling, fear-based religion, that we are separate from God, that we must please God, and, you know, everything we do is a sin. And I was like, wow, you know, like, imagine believing that. And there's a few guys on the trips that were part of either like Mormon or Jehovah's Witness that really felt that kind of, as a child growing up, pressure to conform against any beliefs or feelings they had. It wasn't important that there was only one way. And it became so obvious that, you know, although this Western world has a lot of interesting things that have come out of it, and capitalism and materialism, and a lot of privilege we talk about now is this kind of like, hey, you have a privilege because you have a better chance of making money, of being rich, of having advantages to go to school, which I think are just conditioning, ways of conditioning people, as you see, like people living in Costa Rica or other kids that grew up out of that. And that was one of the stories about coming down here, which I'll share on a separate podcast about living here in Costa Rica. I don't know if I shared that one already, but I will share it on a further one. Actually, I think I did, actually, and someone connected me with that person that told me that my kids were my responsibility. If I didn't get them out of the Western education system, it was on me. And I've since then, someone said they know that guy, and it's going to put me in touch. I think his name is Tim. And so sitting there thinking about privilege, it's like, wow, I am actually at a disprivilege or whatever when it comes to being connected to nature and truth and lineage of a tradition, because I don't resonate with that tradition. It was implanted there. And the medicine kind of told me, it's like the most important lineage is your spiritual lineage. As you become more aligned with spirituality, it's going to bring you into these different lineages, and you can be a part of whatever lineage you want traditionally if you respect it and come to it with reverence and humility and awe and openness. And, you know, this is kind of also very speculative, but it says all this junk DNA is going to align you to, it's going to come turn on as you become more spiritual, as people become more connected, and all these lineages are going to start merging into one type of race that is aligned and together.
which I found quite interesting. And so understanding that, it felt a little more a little more comforting, I guess, is the thing, that I'm on the right path and many others are as well, feeling this kind of need to connect and move through the bullshit, which I feel a lot of it's manufactured, and a lot of the things in the media is trying to put people against each other, trying to find differences in race and social status and focus on the material world, and that's what really can separate us and create division. Whereas when you come back to nature, it's all there. We can live together in harmony, and use technology not for greed and profit, but to live in harmony and to help each other and to bring everyone up to that same level. As we see through COVID, this divide has become even greater. And the real divide is between rich and poor. And they're trying to make black, white, and political and medical decisions divide us. But really at the top is these people that are getting richer and richer and richer. And the divide is getting greater. And everyone in the middle, they just want to distract and fight against each other for their differences. So that's what came up in that. So I don't know how you want to digest that. Maybe you have different perspective. Maybe you think I'm an asshole and, you know, I have white privilege and all that kind of stuff, which there may be some things. I know my grandparents were poor as hell and traveled around the world to work their ass off for what they have right now. And I feel grateful that I have such an incredible life that I do not take for granted. But I do not think I'm better than anyone else by any means necessary as a human being. So I'll end that at that. And basically after that, we had one more night ceremony, which was interesting. It was amazing. We sat by a fire and drank wachuma, which is a day ceremony. We're a little bit more confined, so less ability to wander off into the darkness for obvious reasons. Sang some songs on the fire and went super deep. But one thing I didn't really keep in mind was the length of the journey. And as they were offering more medicine, you know, probably middle of the night, I took a third cup and eventually found myself back in Cusco, my hotel room, staring at the ceiling super deep in the medicine. So highly recommend not doing wachuma indoors. I didn't plan that to happen, but it happened, and I wasn't really going to wander around Cusco at 3:30 in the morning. Just not sure how safe that would be. So really had to just sit there with that, the intensity of it, and just really feeling like, hey, it might not end. I'm alone. I'm unsupported. But I guess the underlying thing was like, everything's going to be okay. You know, just got to sit with this and be present. And, you know, one of the core wounds I've been working on is, you know, fear of being alone from childhood. And so I went for breakfast eventually and then found my way back, and the breakfast really didn't help. I thought it might kind of curb the experience, but eventually I just put some headphones on when it was about 8:39, walked out to the town square and just sat down and watched the fountain, just watched people, just sat there and was totally present. No thoughts in my mind, absorbing the music and just observing people. And it was such a beautiful experience to see all the different people, from tourists to locals to people working to the animals, just in one little town square. This is always happening at all times, everywhere in the world. And these places that I sit in, I sometimes think about, like, who has sat here before me, whether it's in nature for, you know, 1,000 years ago, who's came through here. In the journey the day before, there's this little ice cold waterfall in a cave that was on a river, and I got to go and do a little ice cold plunge in there, and I just thought about how lucky I was to be in that exact space in that moment, and just curious to who had been there before me. And so advice is, I would prefer to do wachuma in nature as long as it takes to be there and not to go back to civilization sooner, specifically isolation in a room or anything like that. And, you know, a couple more days of traveling, and it was so much jam-packed, and yeah, I felt like there's only so many stacked stones I could see. Once you see a couple of these 100,000-pound stones, they all start looking the same, and I felt ready to go home, and I started reflecting on that, and one of the main things that came out that I want to share is, you know, to make your life amazing wherever you go, to be excited about every turn, not to be upset that you're leaving, because I remember the past going somewhere, like, oh, I don't want to go home. And it's really, you know, I guess the goal is to make your life as incredible as you can, no matter where you are. Being excited about the things to go home to. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of things that I'm not excited about to go home to, whether in Costa Rica or in Canada, which we're planning a trip back for the summer. But just make yourself excited about wherever you're going. and to see the bright side in that, to look forward to that, and to try to cultivate a life where you're excited. You know, if you guys are like, oh, I'm sad to go home, it's like, okay, now you gotta work on making your home exciting, so whenever you go back there, you're excited to go there, the people you see, the things you can do, and not try to bring your mind to all the reasons why you don't want to go back somewhere. And I think the opposite is true of, you know, when you're doing this work and you're doing medicine and you're working on yourself, you know, the most important environment is the one inside yourself, the one inside your head and how you see the world. But when you're doing plant medicine, you go back to an environment that is what got you to the place you're in the first place, and that's going to bring you back to where you were quicker. But if you can create an environment wherever you go that fosters joy and excitement and creativity and all things that are important to you, you know, you can really not only continue to be on that level that you've achieved, the work that you've done on your trip or whatever, you know, you've done, but you can also improve and keep growing in every environment. So just be excited about all the spaces you have. And if they're not feeling good, then that's something you got to work on. Create some change, and you can create change. It's a decision you need to make. It doesn't need to cost money. It doesn't need to be anything complicated. It's one of the things I learned from this trip and from nature is it's quite simple. Nature is simple. We overcomplicate things as humans, and that creates most of our suffering. So I guess I'll wrap it there today. We're at 26 minutes. So thank you for listening. I'd love to hear any insights you guys have on any of these topics. And I hope none of it is offensive. It's just here for more dialogue, for sharing, for expressing, and maybe to educate myself more on some of the things that I may not have enough perspective on. So if you do have a different perspective, I'd love to hear it. There's an amazing bird that just landed on the sill here. It is so cute. And I'll just end with that. Thank you, bird. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and looking forward to hearing you guys. Peace.